3D printing today, show number 559, 4-axis 3D printer, traveling speed.
Welcome back to 3D Printing Today, the podcast about all aspects of 3D printing. Hobby, professional, industrial, it doesn't matter, we cover it all. My name's Andy Cohen, and I'm here with Mr. Whitney Bonner.
How you doing, Andy?
Well, my voice is not completely back yet, but it's almost back. That was tough. I got my really, really bad seasonal cold and lost my voice.
That's too bad.
And it's almost back.
Oh, good.
I don't sound like me, do I?
You sound a little rough.
I sound rough.
A little rough.
Anyway, you know what's actually also rough is what's going on between Bamboo Labs and Stratasys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it seems Bamboo Labs is trying to get one of the cases dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
One that's going on in Marshall, Texas. Bamboo Labs is saying that all the stuff, remember we talked about this in the past, where Stratasys is saying, well, you can't do purge towers, you can't have the heated capture. There's a whole bunch of stuff that just about all hobby level 3D printers are doing these days. You can't do that because it's our patent.
Right.
Bamboo Labs is now saying, well, it's not actually us that did that. It was Bamboo Lab USA.
So okay,
you're going after the wrong party.
Because Bamboo Lab USA was the one that designed the printer. I'm not sure what their argument is or what the merits of their argument are, but it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the courts.
The article that we cite in 3DPrintingIndustry.com actually also states that there's a parallel case going on in a different jurisdiction, and that may be the real reason why this case may get dismissed.
Right. It sounds like that it was the same case was basically being run in the Eastern District of Texas and the Western District of Texas.
Well, that's interesting. Texas is so big, you can sue twice there.
Unless, of course, the defendant asks to have one of them dismissed, which seems to be what they're doing. But time will tell how this case plays out. But it's interesting to see the song and dance that goes on.
Yeah, I like the photograph you pointed at.
Yeah, the photograph is really cute. It shows a Fortis and a X1C together having their day in court, and the Fortis is the same size as the X1C, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, you could put the X1C inside
the Fortis.
Yep. Yeah. Oh well. Anyway, what's coming up on our show this week?
Let's see. We're going to start out talking about a 4-axis 3D printer.
And then we're going to discuss the complexities of figuring out what your travel speed is. What do you think?
Let's get going.
So thanks to Ken Davidson on our forum, who posted a post about this. This is someone who posted something on YouTube. Now, I want to point out that the person who posted this on YouTube is not the kind of YouTuber that we are talking about when we tongue-in-cheek go, oh, another tuber.
Right.
This is not somebody who has a channel who tries to make a TV show about 3D printing, and they're not coming at it from as an engineer.
Right.
That's what we refer to when we denigrate a YouTuber. Okay, so let's get that straight.
Yes, we got a note from Bob Lancaster with the same YouTube link, and yeah, he was.
Yeah, we try to not do that. We try to just sit back and chat about 3D printing. We are not here to put on a TV show to make money. That's
right.
Not what we're doing, and there are a significant number of people out there trying to do that. Some of them are trying to do it as under the guise of 3D printing guns.
Mm-hmm.
Some people try to do it under the guise of 3D printing toys.
Yep.
Some of them under the guise of, let's do the hottest, fastest, most impressive 3D printer out there. And then there's a couple that just like to make themselves look like they're a TV personality. And that's what we're referring to, guys.
Right. Let's flog whatever they sent us for free this week.
Yes. And sure, I'm sure there's entertainment quality in there.
Sure.
but that's not what we do. Okay. Yep. But this YouTuber is not in that vein.
YouTuber, this is a very cool project.
This YouTuber came up with a four-axis 3D printer that skates upon the issue of non-planar 3D printing that we've talked about a lot on this podcast. We've talked about it in terms of using a 6DOF robot arm to 3D print something without the 2D plane, to do it in a 3D space,
right?
To somehow figure out how to do 2D planes in 3D. And that seems to be what this YouTuber has kind of figured out.
Well, it's interesting because non-planar 3D is enormous field, and there's lots of different reasons why you'd want to print things non-planarly. He seems to be mostly focused on printing non-planar to avoid support materials. Which is certainly one of them, but there's other. I mean, to print, you know, essentially 3D layers is you can also greatly improve your surface quality,
right?
Greatly improve your engineering strength. I mean, there's a lot of other reasons to do it other than just avoiding support material and printing overhangs. But that seemed to be what he concentrated on. This, and it's a very impressive project that he's done. It's a pretty slick printer. It's a polar printer. So basically the bed is round and rotates. So that's sort of one of your axes. Then the print arm pulls back and forth along the radius of that rotating bed. Another axis, it goes up and down another axis, and he added a fourth axis, which is basically the print head, the angle that the print head is at. Normally we would have our hot end pointing straight down. His, you can rotate it in like 270 degrees or something. So very interesting, interesting project. Impressive to see.
However, it does look current. It's limited currently. Other non-planar solutions that we've examined. And we've been wondering how it could ever come up with a generic solution that everyone could use. And
right.
We're not there yet.
No, this
is just another one of those. Here's an experimental thing that someone's come up with that works for some things.
Right.
And is probably not going to be able to be productized all that easily.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and it's rather limited in terms of what it can do. I mean, he actually points out sort of the limitations of the polar printer.
I like the scene of the. So he's printing a propeller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is actually a good application.
It's a good application for it. But note that in his slicer.
Uh huh.
He has to bend the blades of the propeller upwards so that the planes are there for the slicer.
Yep.
And then after they've been sliced, it then bends the propeller blades down.
Yep.
And
it's kind of a kludge.
it's still not there, guys. So it's going from a planar design into a non-planar execution.
Right.
Which maybe that's the way to go. Maybe that'll work.
Well, sure.
Will it work for all use cases? I don't think so. I doubt it. But at least he figured it out for airplane propellers.
Yeah. Well, and it looks like, I mean, it's a cool project.
It is.
It's fun to watch. No, it's not the generalized solution that we're all hoping for, but maybe it's a little step along the way. It's nice that you can go on GitHub and get his slicer software.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to try playing with this yourself, you're more than welcome to. But yeah, it's not the be all and end all of non-planar printing. But it's always, you know, sooner or later, if we come up with enough of these little pieces and people start thinking about it, different ways to approach this, you know, because really you're not talking about a 3D slicer anymore. You're talking about a peeler, right?
That's not what he did.
No, he distorted it and then sliced it and then distorted it back to get his toolpaths, which is very clever.
If you take this from a systems engineering standpoint, so mm-hmm. the requirement was to get around any form of supports, right?
Yep.
Okay. And you don't want to use multi-materials, right?
Yep.
Okay. So why not put the 3D printer on a gimbal?
Uh-huh.
And make it regular 3D printer.
Right.
And when you get to your overheads, your overhang, just flip it 180.
The printer, sure.
Flip it 180.
Yeah.
So that now your overhangs are now not overhangs. Right. They're tops.
Yep.
You complete your overhang, flip it back the other way.
Uh-huh.
And there, you've solved it. You don't need to go non-planar.
Uh-huh. Except for applications where your overhang, I mean, if you're bridging, right? So you've got mm-hmm. two columns and you're bridging them, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter. Unless you are in zero gravity, there's going to be some gravitational effect on that part that you're bridging, right? Even if you turn the printer upside down,
yes,
then it's going to be drooping.
That's
It'll be
true.
Drooping up into the model.
That's true. So, it'll still droop.
So there's really no way solution. Around that.
Put it up in an airplane and have the airplane go straight
right,
to the ground
there you go.
while you're printing that.
Yes,
that
yes.
Part.
The Vomit Comet 3D printer.
There
they've done that. They've had 3D printers on the Vomit Comet.
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. And I could just imagine what the smell would do to your stomach while you're flying around. Anyway, this really was a great project and a great vid, and we recommend it. We're going to put the vid, a URL, in our show notes.
You betcha. Check it out.
So this was from one of the discussions on our forum after we put out the episode on the complexities of going fast, all the different factors, all the different things to make your printer go fast. And I think this is from the one of our members who started off that discussion in the first place. The handle is Rise with Rest. Rise with Rest. Wouldn't it be Rise with the Rest?
I don't know.
Rise with Rest. Take a rest and then you rise? I'm not sure.
Who knows?
Anyway, the question came up as to, you know, how what can be done to go faster. And, you know, there's lots of things you can do to go faster. Of course, you know, speed, quality are coupled.
Right.
You can't get around that. But
what is it? It's like price, speed, and quality, pick two. Right?
One of our forum members, I think it might be Mark, I'm not sure who it was, it's gonna be Mark or Luke, one of those guys came in and suggested, well, you can go faster if you compromise the print, how you do your print. So much less infill, a lower number of shells.
Yeah, that'll reduce your print time.
Right. But, you know, my position on prints is you start with an assumption that you want to print optimally for that use case.
Right.
And you don't want to compromise that for speed. If you are, then you may just simply be wasting material.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that position, then you're only going to go for the optimal settings. You're not going to compromise your settings. Then what can you do to enhance speed without affecting quality too much? And the very first thing that I would look at that I suggested on the forum is travel speed. Travel speed simply because, well, you're not putting down filament, you're not putting down plastic while you're traveling. You're just moving around. But there are still things you need to take into account. Even something that's seemingly as simple to go fast with as travel speed has complications. And we should talk about that. So when you travel, what we're talking about is when the print head leaves the print and moves to some other part of the print or to a different object on the print bed. Yeah, that's traveling.
Right.
And you can see in your slicer, when you look at your previews, they're all slicers let you set features.
Preview the travel modes.
And all the different features are in different colors. So you can see where all the traveling is going to happen. And you'll be surprised. Most of your time, or not most, but a substantial amount of your time, depending upon your print, will be traveling.
Right. And if you have the wrong temperature set for the material you're using, you'll end up seeing all of your travels as well.
Yeah, right. You'll see little streams will go right. everywhere.
If you ever get a really badly spider-webbed part, that's your travel that's happening.
Yeah. And you'll get that for lots of reasons. We'll save that for the next segment. What do you think? Anyway, how to get your travel speed up. The way to do it, most of the time, though, and I should warn folks, most of the time, most manufacturers, such as Prusa, it's a good example, Bamboo is another one, will already have your optimal travel speed mm-hmm. dialed in, depending yep. upon the quality setting that you pick in your material. So if you're going to start changing it for those kinds of machines, keep in mind, somebody's being paid to do that. You're changing it, puts you into a realm that may not be well known. However, if you're doing this on a machine that you've assembled, that's a completely different thing
right,
altogether.
You gotta figure out what your optimal travel speed is yourself.
Right. Or if you're doing this on a machine such as an Ender 3, that's also a machine where you should explore because, well, first of all, each one of these machines is going to be different for lots of reasons. Mm-hmm. The wear on the Delrin wheels, how well you've adjusted those wheels, how tight everything is in your machine. Mm-hmm. All of those are factors that you need to take into account first, and that's all tuning, and that's yet another segment, different right. topic. So assuming all that's in place, and assuming it's a machine where the manufacturer hasn't already optimized it, and you want to see how fast you can go, well, what I would do is I would start out, let's assume Prusa Slicer. I would start out by going into the shapes gallery, pick a little cube, put it onto the bed, size it, make it so that it's not that big, maybe 10, 20 millimeters in X and Y, make it maybe 20 millimeters tall. Doesn't have to be big. Maybe 10 millimeters would be enough, because you don't care how well it prints. That's not critical. Okay, doesn't have to be a complex print. And then stick it on a corner of your bed, and then make three more. Copy it, copy mm-hmm. paste three times, right. and put those copies on each of the corners of your bed.
So you have a lot of travel.
Yeah, and I would put one in the middle. So five little rectangular
little
shapes
or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, five little towers. And printed material that you are familiar with, so it's no longer that's not an issue.
Right, you make sure you got the temperature dialed in. Right,
right. Mm-hmm. And you can program it to change the travel speed. You can do that, but I'm going to assume you don't know how to do that. So you're going to have to do it the slower way and slice it for each speed. You can design this so that one print, you can check each speed to see when your current...
Or so you have multiple travel speeds within a single print.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, you could. It'd be a huge... I mean, you'd have to be editing the G-code.
Yeah, you have to know what you're doing. Yeah. So for those of you, most of us, who won't know how to do that,
right.
you have to set your travel speed for each time you print it. You mm-hmm. don't have to print the whole thing. Just print mm-hmm. it for maybe three or four layers to see yep. what's going on.
Yeah.
And, slowly ramp up the speed, mm-hmm. see what it does.
Yep.
And you will eventually find, assuming you don't change acceleration setting, mm-hmm. that at some point, either your layers will overshoot or you'll get knocked out of register.
Mm-hmm.
If your acceleration is not set correctly, you may also knock the printer right off the table. But that's not likely, because usually the default settings have the acceleration set correctly.
Right.
Now, assuming you've done that and you've got some overshoot, then you can control that overshoot by tweaking your acceleration.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming it's increase. You agree? Is it
increase the acceleration? I would probably decrease the acceleration if you're getting overshoot.
So let's get this straight, because I always confuse them.
Okay.
When you increase acceleration,
uh-huh.
aren't you increasing the ramp up?
Right. So your printer is coming up to speed faster.
I thought that would be decrease acceleration. because that distance, that ramping distance, is getting decreased.
Well, the acceleration, generally the term, I mean, different software writers may implement this differently.
That's my fear, that it may be different between different firmwares.
But generally, acceleration is measured in, what, meters per second per second?
Yeah.
Right? Meters per second squared. And so if you are increasing the acceleration, it means you're going to reach maximum speed faster. So your ramp is going to be steeper.
Well, for sure, if you start monkeying with it, you'll see which direction you're supposed to be setting it really quickly.
Yeah, just write down what the numbers were before in case you need to go back.
And the moment you start playing with it, you'll start to hear it. It goes, you hear the ramp up and the slowdown.
Yep.
It's increasing speed and decreasing speed.
Yep.
And of course, if you've got a small printer, and these objects are close together, you'll never get there. So that's why I say put the objects on the corners of the bed, get the maximum distances. Don't have the object in the middle. Don't do that. Because you want to, if you're going to be changing acceleration,
you want
your maximum travel so you can hear that. And keeping in mind also that at some point, if you go too quickly and you don't brake quickly, your printer is going to start dancing. I've done that. I made this replicator 2 here jump up and down on my table. Scared the crap out of me.
So the way I look at it is basically you are firing off step and direction signals to your stepper motor drivers, right? That's on sort of the stepper motor driver level. That is what they are receiving from your control board, is step and direction. So if you are firing off too many step signals, firing off your steps too rapidly, which is what happens when you try to move too quickly with the stepper motor, the stepper motor driver will issue those signals to the stepper motors, but the stepper motors themselves will not be able to move fast enough to accommodate that. And so you end up with issuing a step that doesn't have a movement that is coordinated with that, right? So you say step, but your axis doesn't actually move because you're saying it to. And you can actually, on most systems that I've tuned, you can actually hear this happening. There's a change in pitch when that happens. It gets kind of this weird noise happening, and you know you're going too fast.
Right.
The other way you know, of course, is that you don't get where you think you're going. So you will notice that your layers will not stack up. You'll be out of register in a hurry if you're doing that. So when you get to that point, then you want to tune back from that speed. And the question is, how far do you tune back? Right. And you want to tune back to the point where you know you're going to be reliable. But is that 80% of the speed where it starts breaking? Is that, 50% of the speed where it starts breaking? That's anybody's guess.
It's a little bit on the tedious side.
Sure.
To get it, to find it.
Yep.
And then the problem I found after playing with it for days and days and days, the problem I found is as your use cases change, it may not be optimal overall.
Sure.
And that's one of the things that conceptually a 3D printer is a compromise of optimum settings for as many use cases as possible. Mm-hmm. And when you try to speed up, you might break that.
Yep.
It's the same thing with 0.2 millimeter layer height, 0.4 millimeter size nozzle sizes.
Mm-hmm.
This is thing about from the beginning of open source 3D printing, we found specific things that overall the entire system, if you start to monkey and change them, it changes things every place else. So for the overall use cases, these settings are probably your best bet.
Right. Because the other thing is once you start pushing your printer really hard, you're also going to be heating your stepper motor drivers more.
Oh yeah,
if you're trying to accelerate more, right? So then it matters how good your cooling is on those. Because if you don't have enough cooling on those, then your stepper motor drivers will start dropping steps.
Yeah, I've seen that happen.
The other
Rep 2 did that.
Right. The other issue is how much current are you expecting to source from your stepper motor drivers? If you don't have that current setting just right, then if you're pushing them harder, you'll get into more trouble. you could have a non-optimal current setting if you're not pushing the stepper motors as hard as
they'll go. Let's explain why. Lower current, so it's quieter.
Right.
So lower current will be quieter, but it won't have as much magnetism holding it at each step.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't have as much magnetism, it will not hold it, and it'll slip.
So it's quieter, it's cooler, but it's less torque.
Less strength of each step. Less
holding
and strength. It'll go, whoops, I missed that. Overshoot, there we go.
Yep.
Okay, there's one more thing that should be considered, and that's input shaping.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're ramping up your speed in travel, and this also matters for while you're printing, but we're only changing travel. If you don't have input shaping, well, think about the pendulum effect of your hot end.
Mm-hmm.
You're zipping along, and then if you go to print right away, that pendulum effect is in there, and you're going to be vibrating.
Yep.
So if you're going to go your maximum travel speed, input shaping is kind of important. You got to have input shaping with the right model in place to compromise, to offset that vibration, stop that pendulum movement before you start printing again.
Yeah.
So if you're doing this without input shaping, you're kind of wasting your time.
Yeah. So these are all problems that you get into trying to go as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Now, if you just go a little bit slower, though, all of these things go away.
Yeah. And that's like we're saying, all of our 3D printers, hopefully, are built around these optimized settings, optimized sizes.
Yep.
And once you try to maximize them, you're in a realm of hot dogging, hot rodding.
Right.
And things may not work for all use cases.
Right. But that's not to say that there aren't some use cases and some printers that you could make go faster than stock, because the sort of stock settings are designed to be the thing that's the most reliable as possible, so they don't have to feel the whole bunch of customer service issues.
That's right.
Right. So if you're going at 60% of the absolute maximum speed is sort of what the stock is, and you take it up to 80%, it might work for you. It might not, but you know that you're the one who's in charge of that now, and you can, dial it back down if you need to. So you might be able to squeeze a little bit more speed out of it, but you're on your own if you do.
I like when I need to print quickly, assuming it's more than one print.
Yeah.
My favorite go-to solution is to just use two printers.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
And I end up getting the whole job done in half the time.
Yep. Yeah.
And that gets you can extrapolate out from there.
Right. If you're doing multiple parts, having a farm is the by far the way to go, because then you can maintain quality. But it's totally depends on what your use case is, how good the quality needs to be. I'm big into making things that are just good enough for whatever the part needs
yes,
to be.
Yes, you are. Yeah. Yes, you are.
The part doesn't need to be perfect. If it's a shim that I'm printing that's going to get buried inside some other assembly, nobody's going to see it. The part doesn't need to be perfect. Yeah. Yeah. It needs to do what it needs to do.
On the other hand, if you're printing to sell it,
well, sure.
Or you're doing it for a client that has certain expectations. you better know what you're doing.
You bet.
But those latter use cases, chances are you're printing it again and again and again, and you get to tune and optimize that specific use case.
You bet.
And you can do that. You get that luxury. On the other hand, if you're a crazy person, like most of us probably are, you got one shot to get that bauble out for your cousin.
There you go.
Good luck.
Yeah, don't try and do it too fast.
Oh boy, Whitney, another show written to the hard drive, waiting for encoding, uploading, and commitment on our feed to all of our very supportive listeners. Thank you all out there for your support on Patreon. Thank you for the positive reviews wherever you can make them. We do appreciate those and the write-ups. And hey, thanks for listening. We do it for fun. We're not really here to make a buck. We're not here to be famous. We just love chatting and teaching and talking about 3D printing, which is one of our favorite hobbies. And we hope that comes off in our podcast. Now, our typical thing at the end of each show is to do a thing of the week. So this week I got to pick it, and I picked something related to one of my favorite animated characters,
whose
name
is
of all time. His name is Gromit. He's a dog. He's known for Wallace and Gromit, and the Oscar-winning full-length feature Wrong Trousers, and they're up for an Oscar potentially again with their follow-on movie, Vengeance Most Foul, which I feel is even better than Wrong Trousers. Anyway, this is called the Gromit Toilet Roll Holder that comes to us on Thingiverse by a user whose handle is Marathon Man.
Marathon Man, otherwise known as Richard Mann.
And it's actually a really cute way of putting that extra toilet roll on the back of the throne. And it's it looks like, you know, Gromit's head is sticking out. And it's a very good rendition of Gromit's face. Multi-part, so you could do multicolor. A very, very nice thing to make. He also made a headphone hook. Actually, no, that's not true. He didn't make it. That's a remix. He took the head from the Gromit headphone hook, which is from someone else. Let's see, who is that from? Because we should give them credit, too, because it's the face that makes this thing so special, really. Hold on. That would be from Jizzymond? No, Jizzymond. Got to click again. Jizzymond from Burrow. Oh, gosh, I can't even see it. Can you see it?
No, I'm not.
Byung-Ho Lee. And it doesn't say where Byung-Ho Lee is from. But they're the one that designed the face, and the face was then cut off and made into a toilet roll holder, which is really cool.
Yeah, well, both of these are really how remixing is supposed to supposed to go.
Yes.
Yep.
So the headphone hook is thing number 5337119, and let's see, the toilet roll holder is thing number 6945494.
And while we were talking about this, I just looked up, and the Wallace and Gromit series has actually won 3 Oscars.
Really?
It won animated short for The Wrong Trousers, and another animated short for A Close Shave, and then it won animated feature for Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So,
ooh, that's cool.
Yeah. So hopefully
Aardman. What's the name of the whole? It's Aardman Studios in the UK.
Yeah.
It's basically Nick Park's studio,
right?
Probably one of the two great, great animation studios we have still around today. And animation these days, especially stop motions, in bad shape. All the productions have stopped from what we're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, if you've got a tip, a question, or a candidate thing of the week, what are you waiting for? Send us an email.
Send it to info@3dprintingtoday.com. That's THREE, followed by the letter D, followed by printingtoday.com.
Again, we'd like to invite everyone to our free forum. It's on Google Groups. Just go to Google, type in 3D printing tips and tricks. If you want to post and take part interactively, you have to hit that join group button and give them an email. Don't use your regular personal email. Make an email on the Gmail system and use that Gmail account to interact with this thing. This way, if somebody pulls your email off there and sends spam, it won't go to your personal email. Mm-hmm. You can keep that separate. That's the best way to go. So let's see. We do have a show next week, don't we?
Oh, we do. On show number 560, we start talking about a 3D printer for a blind person.
We're going to look at how to do Boolean edits in PrusaSlicer.
And then we talk about the benefits of repeated production.
Well, I guess that's it for this show.
Great. Thanks for listening.